This is a production from the Yak Podcasting Network. The home for your growing sonic map of local voices united in their commitment to the best in podcasting.
And now, a yak.
Yak!
Welcome, everybody, to this week's edition of the Ticket City podcast on orangebloods.com. Thanks to our guys over at Ticket City, 1-800-SOLD-OUT. Go to ticketcity.com. Direct message at Ticket City to get your ticket needs requested. We've got a liaison that's specific to Orange Bloods that will help you out. And look, man, when it comes to tickets, I'm typically the kind of guy that likes to go to wherever I'm going with badass tickets in hand. I'm not one of these dudes that tries to save $50 by doing a last 30-minute hustle. If you're a little bit more like that, Ticket City's your place. Or if you're, you know, if you're a little bit like me, I think Ticket City's your place. If you're just trying to like squeeze the best possible deal and it means pushing it till like 5 minutes before a game tips off, you know,
shut out or missing half the game or whatever.
That's just not my thing.
Same, I'm with you. Yeah.
So I love Ticket City. They've been taking care of us for like almost 2 decades. And look, man, I got free. It's funny, guys, because I don't want to kill too much of the show talking about tickets, but I told my mother-in-law, because she got tickets for the Sugar Bowl through Ticket City. And I said, look, I've done the Sugar Bowl thing in like 95, and 5 minutes before kickoff, you could get tickets for like $20. And I remember at the time, back in 95, thinking to myself, man, I wish I'd waited, because I spent an arm and a leg to get tickets. And so I told her, you have that option. Like, you could totally go down there. I think you'll be fine. I don't think tickets on game day are going to be an issue. And it just turns out that my mother-in-law is exactly like me now, that, you know, I'm 42 and my mother-in-law is whatever she is. And she was like, no, I want my good seats and I'll pay for whatever it takes to have them. And I don't want to be trying to like hustle some like stranger on the streets for tickets. And I was like, all right, that's my advertisement for Ticket City. Look, it's our national signing day. Post-day show, if you will. The entire Orange Bloods crew is here. Anwar is here, although he's got limited time with us in this particular podcast because he's picking up mom at the airport, so we totally get that. Alex will eventually join us. We don't know when, but...
Present.
Oh, there it is! So Alex is here. Dustin is here with a horrible-sounding voice that I offered him the opportunity to bail on this because he does sound halfway terrible. Dustin, you going to make it?
I'm going to make it. I'm awake, so I don't know how long that's going to last, but it's going to last for at least another couple hours.
You'll get into that Shaka teleconference in about 10 minutes, and then we'll just never hear from you again.
Definitely not asking any questions in the teleconference.
And then we've got Jason Sukumel, who... led the charge by a country mile yesterday as it relates to signing day coverage. There wasn't a ton of stuff because we were just sitting around waiting on a JUCO kid who went to Ole Miss and then the Javon Shepherd thing to kind of be put to bed. But Jason Sukumel is here. Fellas, the day after signing day is always like this, like the day after Christmas to a certain extent. Like, it's just you've pointed to a day for so long and now it's gone. And then it's like, okay, now we're in the off season and now it's 2020 and now spring football is a month away. And now we just adjust.
Well, if you use the Christmas reference, if you're like my kids, it's the day after Christmas. You've put away those toys you just got yesterday, and now my kids are already asking, what are they getting for their birthday? So, you know, the 2020 class is right around the corner, man. I think I said I get this weekend. Now they may host, who knows, they may have somebody pop in on campus, but there are no recruiting events this weekend. But starting the next weekend, there are plenty of recruiting camps. There are going to be junior days, so on and so forth. So, you know, get a one-week breather for you recruiting junkies. Take a one-weekend breather, and then it's on to 2020 starting next week already.
Anwar, what was interesting about, yes, and I want to get a lot of you early in the podcast because you do have to go pick up mom in like 20 minutes or whatever that time frame is. You were at the press conference yesterday, and I thought Herman's vibe, like he kind of said it, like, you know, there's not a whole lot different from today versus when we did this exact press conference in December. So a lot of the conversation, it seemed like yesterday, was as much about the football program in general. It was half signing day conversation, but it was also a day where there were some football things talked about. I thought a number of them were fairly interesting in terms of what they might be looking for in from Shane Buechele to grad school need, like transfer needs or and what they might be interested in. And it was like, so it was half a State of the Union pre-spring press conference, which is probably going to be still another month away. So more so than the recruiting stuff, which we will just, we'll do some Javon Shepherd talk and we'll dive in with Jason in a little bit to some of the nitty gritty 2019 recruiting stuff at the end. Your football thoughts on a day that I thought the big headlines were more about the football things than maybe the recruiting things.
Well, let me filibuster this before I have to leave my mom at an airport stranded and start off her vacation on a bad note. So the first thing that really stood out to me, honestly, was in, you know, Alex caught this because he put this in his write-up, and I caught it immediately also when he's talked about Craig Nivar becoming the co-defensive coordinator. That to me was the, we're setting it up for when Todd Orlando leaves. Like that to me was the potential anticipation of Todd Orlando has been getting talked to and he's had some interviews and you know what, there's a good possibility he might take a job after this year. So how do we save this in recruiting? Oh, we already have a defensive coordinator who can come in and take over. So from a recruiting standpoint, you don't have to worry about that being used against you. And so that was like an interesting thing that I saw that Tom Herman was being apparently preemptive. Alex mentioned that in his write-up, but a really astute part on him. I thought the other thing that kind of stood out outside of Shane Buechele just kind of deciding that he just didn't want to work out with the team because it just felt strange and awkward to him. The other thing that kind of stood out was when I asked him about having playmakers, how he jumped on that because he knew the exact stats of, and when I asked him about not having plays over 50 yards and how he knew that they were like at the bottom tier of teams and one of only a couple of teams in the country that didn't have a play over 50 yards.
Anwar, real quick.
Yes,
that was my favorite part of the press conference because that has been such a talking point for you. Like we've talked about that so much because it's, you know, the idea of adding like next level explosiveness has been a conversation piece. So to see him completely in tune with you, it just made me chuckle because we've had this conversation before.
Yes. And you know what? I've mentioned it on the board, right? And people have blasted me on our board for saying it. And they're like, what do you mean? Little Jordan Humphrey's a playmaker. What do you mean? Colin Johnson's a playmaker. And like Alex, maybe he should open the show because I just felt validated because even Alex, because Alex kind of pointed out, like, as far as like playmaking ability, like, what did you say, Alex, that those guys are like mismatch guys more so than they are as far as like make or break? What was your exact wording, Alex?
I don't remember. I remember saying that Colin Johnson and Lil Jordan Humphrey, like the way that your two best offensive weapons last season were like size mismatch guys. They weren't guys that are just going to burn you with, you know, these game breaking kinds of plays. And I mean, I think that that manifested in what was sort of the more of a dink and dunk nature of the offense last year.
Yeah, like you saw like the guy, when you see other teams like the Oklahomas of the world, or you even saw some of the Oklahoma State, you know, guys who could just make a play and make it easy on the offense and not dink and dunk the whole time. If, you know, felt like I was watching John Gruden's West Coast offense at times where he's just dinking and dunking and down the entire field. So him recognizing that, hey, they needed playmakers and now they've got guys who can be potential playmakers, Jordan Whittington in the backfield, which we reported in the war room weeks ago that he was going to be getting touches at that position. You know, I think those are the main things that really stood out to me. The preparation of Nivar as a potential defensive coordinator down the line, and then kind of the playmaker thing of feeling like they finally have some guys that can make plays.
Well, let's talk about Nivar for a second, because if that's the case, then that is the that's if he's the future defensive coordinator or the lead of a co-coordinator situation, however they might. When I got to be honest, when I first saw the the new tag, I thought, oh, well, Nivar is going to get a bump in pay, and he's getting this co-DC tag because that'll help justify the pay when they go to the Board of Regents, and they'll be like, well, now he's co-DC, so that's why we're paying him more, because I feel like Nivar's a guy that is due for a bump. I did not immediately think to myself, he's definitely replacing Todd Orlando. And the reason for that is I've seen enough coordinator changes that whatever you think you might do 12 months from now can be completely different 12 months later, because context will be everything. If, you know, if Texas went 9-3 next year and missed the Big 12 championship game, solid season, nothing to sniff at. But they just finished third in the Big 12 and went 9-3. And then Todd Orlando left for any reason. I think there would be pressure at that point, at least more than exists today. And I think it would be like, you have to go get somebody who's proven. And, you know, it'll be fascinating when this thing pops up, because Craig Nivar has zero defensive coordinator experience. He's not called defensive snaps in games. He's not been the orchestrator, if you will. And, you know, this happened with Dwayne Aquina in, 2007, and it was a disaster. It happened 10 years prior. Once every decade. In the 90s, John Makovic was given a blank check to go get any defensive coordinator in the country that he wanted, and he did this charade of a coaching search. There had been talk that Texas, big money Texas guys, wanted him to go hire Bob Stoops from Florida to be his DC. And when it was all said and done, he hired from within and made Bobby Jack Wright, who's gone on to have a fantastic career as an assistant coach in the 20 plus years since this has happened. He's been at Oklahoma. And it was a disaster. He makes Bobby Jack Wright his defensive coordinator, and he loses his job 12 months later. Mack Brown tried to do this with Dwayne Aquina on some level. First, it was Larry McDuff, and then you know, it's Dwayne. It didn't work. They tried to make Dwayne Aquina the guy. They tried to promote him from within because he was a good recruiter, because he was a good position coach, and that proved to be a disaster. And Mack had the juice to do what the hell he wanted to when he made that decision, and they gave him a redo. And what happened? They went out and got Will Muschamp and spent half the national debt to go get the guy instead of taking chances. So when I saw this, I thought it was purely a title to justify salary type thing. But I have come around on this idea that it could mean what you guys think it means. I'm curious. Like, I think maybe a question on the eve of the spring, Anwar, is, coach, we know Todd Orlando is a guy that, okay, you want your guys to be head coaches. We know that Todd Orlando is a guy that's had his name whispered about with potential future head coaching jobs. Should we look at the promotion of Craig Nivar as co-DC as a step towards the eventual solution, should that ever happen?
Well, Anwar had to leave to go pick up his mom. It is a fair question, but I think that's probably a question better asked behind the scenes, if you want to get a truthful, accurate answer. I mean, listen, Nivar is...
Why can't you ask that question at a press conference?
Well,
because he knows that Nivar is going to hear the answer.
Yeah, and you're going to get coach speak. Well, of course. Yeah, of course. I mean, you're going to...
But I think if we're good reporters, like, those are questions... we're talking about this as the number one thing, potentially, to come out of a 30-minute, 35-minute press conference yesterday, and... I think with some thought, I think it's a question that warrants being asked.
I have mixed feelings on this. Nivar has been certainly in the 2018 group with the safety class, but, you know, he did a really good job this year too, on the heels of signing Caden Stearns and BJ Foster to go out and get, Tyler Owens, who he recognized that talent pretty much way before most others did. Tyler Owens turns out to be a borderline five-star type talent almost. Chris Adamora, a guy they love out of California. And Nivar's just a bulldog recruiter, man. Herman said, hey, with the way we work things and the conference we play, and he's heavily involved in the game planning,
you know, I don't know, but maybe some other coaches have been, or other colleges have been sniffing around Nivar. Me, I think it was more like you said, Ketch, hey, let's keep him happy. Let's give him an extra title so we can justify giving him a bump in pay that, frankly, he's earned.
No doubt. 100% on board with that.
You know, in maybe, let's say, and this is total just me spitballing gut feel, but if Orlando, let's say Orlando leaves after the 2019 season, do they promote Nivar to the lone defensive coordinator? That, I mean, maybe. I don't know. That would surprise me a little. I would think they would probably bring in someone with D coordinator experience, and maybe, you know, Nivar certainly could keep the co-tag in the title. But to me, this was – and again, I haven't poked around on behind the scenes or anything. We'll certainly do that and get to that. But my immediate reaction is that this was more, as you said initially, just a title that they can reward a guy who's done tremendous, tremendous work and deserves a raise, and this is a way to get it done.
Alex, your thoughts?
Well, I mean, I look, there were people on the board yesterday after I posted my reactions column to the press conference, which, by the way, I can't believe that I was just looking. I put up two columns yesterday, one that I put literally like 2 days of work into and one that I wrote in my daughter's – like yesterday I had to pick up my daughter from her – from school and get her right over to her karate class. And I had my son too. And there was no way for me to get that column out in time unless I just drove over there to her school, like right when it started. And I sat in that damn parking lot and just did it on my, like on my phone, Bluetooth, and then just published it there from there in the car. Literally, it took me, you know, 35 or 40 minutes to write that. That thing's gotten like twice the views and the reads of the thing I took 2 days to write.
And the other one's even linked on the front page, so it should be driving more traffic.
I just can't believe it. I hate writing that column every week, and every week it's one of my most read columns. But anyway, it's like the thing I put literally the least work into. But it's just how things go, I guess. But anyway, when I was writing that, my thought in the thread, people came at me and said, one guy said, look, there's literally less than a 5% chance that Craig Nivar is the next, you know, defensive coordinator at Texas. And I said, well, if that's the case, I'll put $20 on it and let's make a 20-1 bet. And you could, you know, and then just come into my DMs. He never did that, but he did during the course of the thread say, look, if anything, this is a Dwayne Aquina sort of scenario here, where if he ever is a defensive coordinator in title, surely Herman will bring in another more experienced guy to be the defensive, you know, the co-defensive coordinator in name, but the defensive coordinator in reality, whereas a guy like Nivar would be the sort of the co-defensive coordinator and maybe not necessarily have all the play calling responsibility, et cetera, which would, I mean, to me, though, I mean, you guys might think differently about this than I do, but if you have a guy on your staff like a Nivar who really, I mean, I've interviewed Nivar. He's a super, super, super sharp guy as far as the way that he thinks about schemes and the way that he evaluates players. He's really good communication-wise. I can tell that that's probably why he's a really good recruiter, very personable, while still kind of having that I don't know, a little bit of that. You could tell that he's kind of a tough coach too, but, you know, personable and nice and communicative. I think that those are aspects that you need in a good coordinator. And I think that the way Tom Herman values continuity and the way that he always brags about having the same staff here and these kids getting to learn the same system year after year and what a difference that's made over the course of the last two. I don't think it's remotely ridiculous to think if Todd Orlando were to get a promotion to another job or you leave for an NFL defensive coordinator job, that you could bump up a guy like Craig Nivar if you're Tom Herman and you have these views about the staff that you hired, your faith in that staff, the importance of culture, and most importantly, the way that continuity breeds into that culture. So those are my thoughts on it. I think it's certainly a greater than 5% shot that Craig Nivar is the next is the next defensive coordinator at Texas, and I was wanting to put my money, at least some of it, where my mouth was on that.
Well, what's interesting, and I think it's just me, Alex, and Jason at the moment, because Dustin's doing some Shaka Smart stuff. So keeping it between just the three of us, I wonder you know, it's a fascinating question because this is a fan base. I mean, let me ask you this, Jason. How does, in your mind, and a lot of it would obviously the context of the timing, like what does next season look like? Do they win a Big 12 championship and the defense is really good? At which point it would make us, you know, continuity really would probably matter at that point, versus the situation I described earlier where they're 9-3 and they finish outside of the Big 12 championship game, that kind of thing. But in general, like at its basic level, how do you think an Orange Bloods audience, our board members, how do you think they would handle a guy with no experience being promoted to a position where they historically have seen disasters occur?
Well, judging on the early returns from yesterday, people wouldn't like it.
Not well. And Alex, I didn't dig deep in Alex's thread to see those responses, but not well. I mean, listen, and this is not to slight. Like I said, Nybar's done tremendous work on the recruiting trail as a coach, but, you know, Texas fancies itself. I mean, there was bitching and moaning, consistent bitching and moaning, overwhelming bitching and moaning about the staff Tom Herman brought with him from Houston, the guys he hired. And, you know, they weren't satisfied. They weren't satisfied with Todd Orlando. They certainly weren't satisfied with Tim Beck. No, I think Texas fans would fancy a much, you know, a bigger established name, somebody who had been a D coordinator elsewhere and had tremendous success. I don't think it would go over well. You know, I think fans like and respect Nybar. And if they got to know him, like Alex said, he's talked to him, he's sharp. And, you know, I've just chatted with him outside recruiting events and stuff. I mean, just incredibly personable guy, a very sharp guy. And I mean, you talk about a guy with unlimited energy. This is a guy with unlimited energy, great sense of humor. I really like him, but I think if you're asking me how the fan base would judge it, I think, I mean, listen, you know, they want whoever the hottest defensive coordinator is in the NFL. That's who they want Texas to come in and hire. I mean, they won't be happy with it with anyone but something like that. So I think the fan base would probably prefer Texas go out and bring in a person with more established credentials as a defensive play caller.
Alex, what else jumped out at you from of all the notes that you took yesterday? Before we move along, what else, just to give you the floor, of things that were most prominent to you?
Let me see. I just to kind of the whole Patrick Hudson thing. You know, he like just kind of giving an update about Patrick Hudson during in the same swath that he was giving the update about Darian Brown. Right. That was a little bit weird, I thought, to go from one sort of one dire situation there with the, you know, with the 2019 running back signee out of Buford, Georgia, who is, you know, all thoughts and prayers to that family as he's going through a nebulous but seemingly very serious medical condition. Right after that, talking about this sort of Patrick Hudson's going on this sort of walkabout, I guess, taking some time away from the team, some sort of sabbatical. To me, that spelled Patrick Hudson not playing football at Texas anymore. That's just my own personal opinion. Certainly, I'm not stating that's the case. I would never want to say that somebody wouldn't be able to come back and do whatever it is that they want to do. But, boy, I mean, whenever he – Patrick Hudson has not been able to stay healthy his whole time at Texas. And then this past year, there was the kind of heat stroke thing where I believe Tom Herman came out and said afterwards it was like a full body cramp or something like that, where he had to go to the hospital. It sounded dubious, and he was not able to practice for the whole year because of it. Patrick Hudson's a guy that's needed to work on his feet forever. He's needed to get just one full year of practices in. And he's truly never gotten that. And he's also a dude that's just an absolute mammoth of a man. And the kind of guy who you'd figure you want to keep that guy around a college strength and conditioning program. You want to keep him working on his body. You want to, you know, making sure that he doesn't, you know, pack on any extra weight and stuff like that, basically all the time. Because whenever you're just that big a guy, having that sort of infrastructure around you really, really helps as far as molding your body. Taking this time away from the football program, to me, I thought that there's very little chance that we are going to see him come back to play at Texas. So for my next update of the depth chart, I'm just going to kind of have Patrick Hudson off of there and just, you know, sort of in the same way as DeMarco Boyd. Like, I mean, there's been no official word about either of these guys, but for now, I just kind of have him off there until we get something a little bit more official. And then the other thing that I thought was, you know, just interesting, and you mentioned it earlier, Ketch, a little bit whenever you talked about Tyler Owens and the way that he was spotted by Nivar, about how Tom Herman was talking about how he was so proud in this class that all the experts, you know, I thought it was so funny that he called the people at sites like ours experts, you know, like the recruiting services. But he said,
damn,
you know,
right, he's given us the goddamn respect that we deserve, finally.
Yeah. But he said, who knows if he had a big
was he saying that tongue in cheek? Wait a
second. Yeah. But anyway, he said that his staff got a whole lot of validation from their original evaluations on some of these players, especially those in the All-Star games, you know, that the kind of the national scouting media came around on their guys and gave them these big boosts in their rankings. And he said that they honestly felt really validated by that. And it kind of, you know, kind of giving an attaboy to his staff about being on these dudes early. And I thought that was just kind of an interesting thing for a head coach to consider. But I mean, Tom Herman needs to be considering those kinds of things. He needs to be evaluating these guys in every part of their job. And as recruiters is certainly one of them. And is evaluators is every bit as important. So that was a neat thing to sort of see Tom Herman take that into consideration. And then, I mean, the thing that I'd like to hear you talk about, Ketch, because I feel like from the way you were weighing into my thread about this, you felt like my thought was when Tom Herman talked about the need to be able to continue recruiting Texas and to be able to make sure that, you know, that the talent here in Texas stays, you know, at the state's flagship university. He said in a perfect world, he said, when I retire here, which I thought was interesting, but he said in a perfect world, you know, for the next 25 years until I retire here, I'd love it to be that we take 25 guys a year from the state of Texas. The fact of the matter is sometimes they're going to have different things in mind, and recruiting is a very personal endeavor for these young men to walk through. And we don't ever want them to come here if it's not the right fit and stuff like that. And so if you know, they're not buying what we're selling here in state, we need to be able to make sure that we have these chops out of state, which to me, I said to fans, look, that's great news, because you've seen that at least one year here in the state of Texas, maybe these players, and we don't know if this is cyclical, whether this will continue, but we've seen that maybe for at least this one year, the big fish in the state of Texas maybe weren't biting on what Herman and the rest of the staff was casting out there, but they've shown that they can go into, you know, more fertile waters elsewhere. And to me, the strategy of going to California, going to Georgia, geez, did you see the number of kids from Darian Brown's school that were going to D1 colleges? That signing day looked like a signing day for like a whole town here in Texas. That was for one high school there. So I think fans should be happy about how hard the staff works to kind of make up ground in years like this. But to as I'm saying that, to Ketch's point that he made yesterday on the boards, from your view, Ketch, in fairness, it was a bad year in state, right?
No.
No?
Not even close.
No?
There were, for the first time in the history
of
the
ranking. I mean a bad year in state for wasn't that what you were saying yesterday in the thread that for Texas this year they did not do well in state as
no,
far
they,
as
they didn't, but in general, the talent in the state this year.
Okay, so the talent in the state was good, but Texas did not do well in state.
Correct. This is the stat, because you know I was working on my my LSR final 100, and I was curious about. I hadn't looked. I probably should have. I don't really care about the way other people rank players, but as I've completed my list, I was like, okay, well, I want to see, because I knew Tyler Owens had been rated as a 5-star on 24/7. So I kind of wanted to see who was regarded as 5 stars for them versus who ended up being regarded as 5 stars in state from Rivals. Cause, I think Rivals has 6 or 7. So I started going down their list and no, I think Rivals has, they have 6 that both of them had. total between the two, there were 10 different players from the state of Texas this year that were either a five-star on Rivals or a five-star on 24/7 or a five-star in both. 10. I don't know. I'm pretty sure I've never seen more than 7 before. So this was a year where, and what really matters and why it doesn't matter whether or not they were five stars or not five stars, because the cutoff line after 15 years of analysis, the cutoff line says that once you get past 70, the number 80 guy in the nation, and 70s-ish, but it never reaches 80. So it's somewhere in like maybe this 65 to 75 range on any given year. Once you get beyond that number, 80 is closer to 750 in terms of developing into an NFL drafted prospect than he is to 70, who he's 10 spots away from. There is this Grand Canyon drop of what four-star quality is and five-star, like the highest four-star quality versus the others. This was a year in the state of Texas when the volume of top 70 guys was at an all-time high. It doesn't matter whether or not they were top 25. Like, we could talk about Tyler Owens all we want to and whether or not he should have been a five-star. Rivals didn't make him a five-star, but Rivals has him as like the number 61 player in the country. He falls into that tier of kids that I'm talking about, that they're the chances of them developing into an impact player, a true, not just drafted by an NFL team, a true impact player. There's just a massive drop. And this was a year when the state of Texas produced more of those types of players than I think it may have ever in the history that I've been covering recruiting. If we just look at like the actual rankings, not my opinion, but the actual, there are 10 kids across two services ranked as five stars. Like, that's notable. Texas got 3. So in a year where there were probably 15 or 16-ish guys that you could put the BAMF label on, and again, an extremely deep year, not necessarily varied in all positions, a lot of receivers, but it is what it is. Texas got 3 out of that group. Now, they supplement, they had the number 3 class in the country. It's what I said yesterday. Look, Jason, we've been covering recruiting, you and I, since the 90s. When Matt Brown arrived, he gave the out-of-state recruiting a real go in ways that we hadn't seen before by going and getting the likes of a Chris Sims and a Bo Scaife and, you know, that 1999 class. They went out-of-state, and they did it again in 2000. But by 2002, they were still going big-time out-of-state. And then after that year, it got real local, real fast. What Tom Herman has done historically this year, I think, is the best individual year of recruiting outside of the state of Texas that any program in the history of the state has ever done. A&M has never done this, and no other school is even really capable of doing what Texas just did. They've put together, for like, in comparison standards, elite of the elite of the elite out of state in this class by what they've historically done over decades. In-state, if you compare it historically over decades in terms of volume, because they got 3 kids that I think are top 10 type guys in Tyler Johnson, and Jordan Whittington, and then Tyler Owens. Like, they got 3 bad mothers in my mind. But in terms of volume, those are really the only 3 guys in all of the ranking services that project as those type of guys that I've been talking about, and that's a bit of a disappointment. You know, the big question is moving forward, was 2019 just a weird year in the same way that 2018 was weird in a positive way for Texas? How much is first year bump at 8? Like, there's a lot of moving parts that formulated why 2019 went the way that it went. I'm really fascinated to see how similar 2020 is in terms of the way the class is put together versus what 2019 ended up needing to be.
Well, a couple thoughts. First off, I mean, this is a number 4 ranked class by Rivals. 12 of the 24 signees are from out of state. I mean, never. You know, I've been catch. We've been doing this a long time. In my wildest dreams, and I think you'd probably tell me the same. If you'd asked me 10 years ago, no way in hell would I have ever believed the University of Texas would have a top four ranked class and half of the prospects would be from out of state.
It just sounds crazy.
I mean, it's just so foreign to us, and just having to kind of change the way I interpret things and wrap my head around things and cover things. But to answer your question, how will it look moving forward? You know, I think, as Tom Herman said yesterday, obviously they'd love to sign 25 kids from the state of Texas, but the early indications for 2020, I think it's going to be pretty heavy non-Texan players again. I mean, they've offered a bunch of California kids. They've got a bunch of those guys who are already planning to visit. A couple of five-star players from California are saying they're going to visit Texas this spring on unofficial visits. They offered a couple of Arizona kids this week. I mean, they've been extending offers all over the country. I think you could pretty much pick a state and they've offered them. But they offered a kid from Buford, Georgia, that Alex was talking about, that in the last week or so, one from Georgia or one from Florida. I don't think it'll be as heavy as this year. I think this year was an anomaly. But listen, man, A&M's not going away. They're going to do a good job under Jimbo Fisher, unless they just shit the bed in 2019 on the field. Then Texas could possibly clean up on in-state recruiting. But if A&M has a decent year and continues to build a little momentum of its own, it's going to be, man, they're going to be just knockout head-to-head in-state recruiting battles with A&M, with LSU, with Oklahoma. Then you got schools like Alabama and Georgia that come in from time to time. You know, Arkansas is trying to get a foothold back in the state. The recruiting in the state, I think, is just tougher now than it has been in a long time due to varying dynamics, which, you know, you hate to use the term, but it did force Texas's hand to go out of state. Now, Texas recognized it. Credit to the staff, Derek Chang, the support staff. They, you know, Brian Carrington, they recognized that they found – they identified targets early. Did a good job locking those guys up. Now, do I think half of the 2020 class will be from out of state? Probably not. But could it be 6, 7, 8 guys? Yeah. And in fact, just based on the early returns, I'm kind of expecting that. Now, who will those guys be? I don't know. I mean, they're laying the groundwork with those out-of-state guys right now. A guy like Keely Ringo, five-star corner who's been on campus a couple times. Justin Flo's a five-star linebacker who's going to visit in the next few weeks is what he's saying. So who will it wind up being? I don't know yet, but I do think it'll be a pretty healthy number of out-of-state prospects until there's some true separation between Texas and Texas A&M in terms of recruiting momentum. But right now, both teams have a lot of momentum, and so does Oklahoma. Until Texas can really separate itself, be it from A&M struggles on the field or just whatever happens, but until there's some real separations in terms of recruiting momentum, yeah, I think Texas is going to have to go out of state to supplement the quality in-state kids that they will get. But they're not going to clean up. Like you said, I think 2018 was an anomaly, the way Texas just kind of swept the field with the top in-state guys. I think 2019 was an anomaly, the way Texas, half of its state was from out of state. I think what we'll see in 2020 will probably be somewhere in the middle of those two.
Hey, Dustin, I want to bring you in because I want to go to some questions from the board that I'm just going to ping you guys and give each of you guys a chance to kind of take different questions that have been thrown into this thread just to change the pace from what we've been doing normally, just to try something different. But we haven't really heard from you at all. We've talked about a lot already, and I'm just curious, just your big picture thoughts and things that stood out to you the most from yesterday.
The Jordan Whittington thing, I think it was good for Texas fans to hear that Tom Herman is still seemingly fully committed to getting that guy some touches in the backfield, because as you guys mentioned early on, just the offense, the next step for Texas offensively is that explosiveness factor. I mean, you look at where they were statistically, they rated pretty well across the board except for one area, explosive plays on offense. And featuring a guy like Whittington in a running back type role, I think that's a good way to do it. I think that's a way to potentially set him up for an immediate impact situation. You know, being around him a little bit down in San Antonio at the All-American Bowl, I mean, the guy physically is ready for that. I mean, he's a good-looking guy physically. He's got some strength. He's got great quickness. change of direction, all those things. I mean, he's just a playmaker. So I'm excited to see what he looks like potentially in that role. And I think it's good for Texas that the staff seems very, very committed to that. On the recruiting thing, I mean, this is kind of something I wanted Texas to do years ago. Is there going to be times in state where for whatever reasons, either relationships or, you know, coaching changes or, you know, whatever, or the, you know, some positions are just not that strong, you're going to have to adapt and go out of state. And I think it was a big, you know, tip of the cap to those guys for just adapting and going out and still finding a bunch of elite talent to build a recruiting class. And I think that this presence in California is only going to continue. I remember I'm trying to search for it. I did a column years ago, actually, with Gerard Martinez of the USC site back then, who's now 24/7. That was probably 4 or 5 years ago, maybe even longer, about why Texas doesn't recruit California more, because there's so many just natural similarities. I mean, heck, how many Californians move to Austin every single day? I mean, it seems like thousands of them do. But, you know, as Texas gets more contested in recruiting, as Jason said, I mean, you've got Alabama trying to get into Texas, Georgia, Ohio State, LSU, you know, A&M under Jimbo Fisher's has changed the landscape of the state. Oklahoma is getting a lot of top guys. I mean, it's Notre Dame comes to the state every year and tries to get somebody. It's tough to recruit Texas right now, and you've got to adjust. And I think that one of the key adjustments Texas has made is gone out and capitalized in California. And there's not as much of a significant, you know, power recruiting presence in California. Alabama doesn't go out there a ton. LSU doesn't go out there a ton. Georgia doesn't go out there a ton. USC's obviously got its issues. UCLA had a horrific recruiting class. You know, Oregon gets some guys, but they're not a monster in recruiting. Washington gets some guys, but they're not a monster in recruiting. So I think it's really smart of Texas to continue to build its presence out in California, and I think it's going to pay dividends again this cycle, as Texas is already seemingly in on a bunch of the big name guys out in California.
Real quickly, I didn't mention my own personal thing that stood out to me the most from a football-related thing, because then I wanted to get into this. And I wanted to ask Jason, you know, maybe – we haven't talked about Javon Shepherd at all, so maybe we're leaving that out. I thought his openness about what they're looking for in the grad transfer department was really interesting, that he talked about the offensive line. About the offensive line, and he talked about running back, you know?
That was my biggest surprise. You and I are on the same wavelength. The fact that running back didn't seem to be a priority was a surprise to me. But
he was like, it'll take a special situation, you know? And offensive line was one where they're not going to just reach to take. You know what I mean? He was real specific about
– I think he downplayed the offensive line a little bit. I mean, listen, I know, you know, Herb Hand's been going all over the country to see – Parker Braun and RJ Proctor he's met with. So yeah, I think he was downplaying the offensive line efforts a little bit, but the running back stuff was a little surprising to me, because they really, you know, to my knowledge, they have not targeted any grad transfer running backs yet. Maybe they won't after listening to Herman.
But at least it tells us that we shouldn't be like, you know, asking sources to check the tight end. You know, hey, do some weird search on all the tight ends. Yeah, exactly. It eliminated a huge portion of, if there are like 1,400 kids in the portal, of course, taking up like all schools from all levels and things like that, you know, then you're probably only talking about a narrow number of guys that you would need to, in theory, potentially keep an eye on. Jason, from a recruiting standpoint, anything before we start getting into some questions from the board? Anything recruiting related or specific from yesterday? There were two announcements that we need to like full on address.
Well, we'll certainly talk about Javon Shepherd. I mean, a huge addition to the Texas class. I mean, it's weird. You know, I sent you guys a message yesterday. Rivals sent me a commitment graphic for Javon Shepherd. I'm like, well, he's technically been committed since July of last year. But to be able to hold on to him and close the cycle with a big head-to-head win over Texas A&M and, to a lesser degree, Alabama, and even lesser degree, Georgia. They really weren't involved that much. But for Texas to close this cycle with a big A, just landing a big-time prospect, but B, a big head-to-head win over Texas A&M on an in-state recruit. You know, that's something Texas needed, was a nice shot in the arm to the class, just confidence, and just, you know, could just let the coaches and everybody just kind of puff their chest out a little bit with signing Javon Shepherd. You know, the backstory there is, you know, when he committed in July, and I tell you what, my war room tonight is going to be, and I've started writing some of it, just kind of some of these backstory things and my feel on some of these guys. But with Shepherd, he committed in July. Texas was always the leader there. He went ahead and committed in July, but he told me right off the bat, he said, hey, I'm going to take other visits. And I went back through my notes in September. He told me I'm going to visit A&M, Alabama, Georgia, LSU. He did visit all those, and Texas, of course. He visited all those schools aside from LSU. When he visited A&M in early January, you know, I don't have sources in the A&M program, but I know people who do, so I checked with those people. A&M was extremely confident coming out of that visit. They even thought it was going to be Alabama. A&M or Alabama were the two teams to watch. Well, then Shepherd visits Alabama. Same deal. I checked with a guy I know who's extremely dialed in Alabama, does a good job. Alabama's vibe was it's going to be Alabama or A&M. So in my mind, I'm thinking, man, what the hell is Javon Shepherd telling those guys that, you know, that I'm unaware of, because I had always thought, hey, he's going to stick with Texas. Well, hearing that stuff, my confidence did with him staying with Texas did come down a little bit, but he visits Texas last weekend. And bottom line is, man, that visit just blew him away. His family was with him. Shepherd told me, I called him at halftime of the Super Bowl on Sunday, and he said, yeah, man, I'm going to Texas. It's a done deal. And he goes, because I was talking about his press conference, hey, is it worth my time to come down there? And he goes, yeah, you know, I am going to Texas. That's what he told me off the record. According to him, he didn't tell the Texas coaches till Wednesday morning. But I have a feeling that they definitely knew. But weird, you know, everybody wants a major backstory there. There really wasn't a lot of sexy, like, just, I mean, bottom line is the kid was just kind of committed, but still keeping an open mind and genuinely torn. The one thing I'll say that hadn't been reported, and it will be in the war room tonight, but one thing that really helped Texas' chance, Texas fans give a huge thanks to Tim Brewster, because if you remember, Brewster, way back, I don't remember when it happened, I'd have to go find the tweet, but he tweeted something to Javon Shepherd and to Kenyon Green. Well, that's a violation. You can't do that. That's an NCAA violation to recruit something directly to prospects like that. You can retweet prospects, you can tweet general stuff, but you can't tweet to a prospect directly, call him by name. Well, Brewster did that, and because of that, kind of quietly, hadn't been talked about much, and I don't know why, but Kenyon Green and Javon Shepherd could not visit the A&M campus. It was like a three-month period where they couldn't visit, and that really hurt A&M's chances. That's when Texas really surged. That helped Texas get the commitment and hold on to the commitment. So in a weird kind of backwards way, Texas fans can thank Tim Brewster for helping UT land Javon Shepherd. But that was kind of the backstory there, a little bit of backstory. Lakia Henry just, you know, he liked his visit to Texas from what I was told, people that spent time with him and, you know, other sources. It was a good visit to Texas, but he just wanted to be in the SEC. You know, he liked Arkansas. He liked Ole Miss. Obviously, Ole Miss won out in the end. You can debate and argue how that happened or why that happened, but it wasn't anything that Texas did. I mean, Texas did a good job of hosting him, but it just wasn't in the cards on that one.
Hey, Alex, did you watch Javon Shepherd?
Yeah, some. I've watched his video from camps and watched his junior highlights and everything.
Snapshot view from what you've seen.
Oh, well, he won't play in year one.
Well, yes. But
I mean, he's a really good developmental tackle prospect. He's got good feet for a guy his size, just a ton of length. And he's got that frame that when you see him in the picture from Jason's commitment article yesterday, I noticed that wearing that number 76 jersey, he kind of looks like a young Kent Perkins or something like that. A real mammoth of a dude, but bigger, but better feet than Perkins had whenever he first came in. So I still like to see more from his senior season. I know there were some off the field sort of issues with him that Jason could probably get a little more into, and certainly a turbulent recruitment with certain certain factors at play as well. So he might have some development to do in the just kind of growing up and getting his mind right for, you know, competing at a college level and also kind of getting his body right. But, you know, he's certainly a guy that has every single tool that you could ask for, you know, length, feet, balance, the frame to really even build on that mammoth size already. I mean, he's a starter kid for a, you know, what you would typically expect out of one of these big sort of SEC left tackles that we, you know, see going in the top of the draft every year. So certainly, and that's why I kept saying to the fans on the message board that we're like, you know, there's all this back and forth with A&M and, you know, working with different trainers that people, you know, have nefarious ideas about. And they would just say, look, I'm tired of with this kid, let's just move on. I'm just like, are you guys crazy? do you think that this kind of specimen just grows on trees and you just give up on it? You throw the baby away with the bathwater because there's a little tumultuous nature to the recruitment. No, I mean, with some of these guys you stick with them, and you know I think that any of the coaches on the Texas staff, if they would have seen what some of the members of our message board were saying about just kind of giving up on the Javon Shepherd recruitment when things felt a little bit rocky, would have just thought it was absolutely ridiculous. He has every tool in the bag. He's going to be one that's really exciting for people to watch develop here at his time at Texas. I would not be surprised if after a redshirt year we're talking about him as a guy that could, you know, maybe surge through his next spring and into that fall camp. I think he's going to take a little bit of time, though. And I even wrote him up yesterday in my chances of contributing early column. I put him in the bucket where it's like this group's almost sure to redshirt. I think if Javon Shepherd doesn't redshirt, it's either going to mean one, he comes in and I've underestimated him and he's so much more of a beast than I ever imagined. Or the much more likely scenario is if Javon Shepherd plays next year, Texas will have been decimated by injuries. And Texas will not have as good of depth on his hands as we initially thought. And the guys like Reese Moore and the Christian Jones, you know, JP Urquidez, these types of players, simply because if Javon Shepherd, a true freshman, is beating them out, that's probably not the best sign.
Did you like him, really like him, or love him? On Shepherd.
I like Tyler. I mean, I like Tyler Johnson better.
Well, yes. But in general, do you like him, really like him, or love him?
Really like him.
Okay.
And I would agree with that assessment, Alex. But I think if he commits himself and, you know, buys in the
That's term, the caveat, right?
Yeah, I mean, he does have some growing up to do. But, you know, I'll say this. Early, I think all the attention and everything maybe went to his head a little bit early in the recruiting process and early in the fall. And, you know, he was dismissed from his team for a short period and then let back on. And, you know, he's worked hard to get his weight under control. I think all the attention and just the accolades and the pats on the back went to his head a little bit. But I think, you know, he kind of got put in check a little bit when he got dismissed from his team for a little bit there. And he has, you know, again, since then he stayed on the team, so he did what he needed to do internally within the North Forest program. He's worked hard to get his conditioning, his weight down. He's shown that he's on the right track. Now, he needs to stay focused, stay hungry, keep grinding, stay mentally tough. If he can do that, his upside, I think, is as good as any lineman in the state. Now, can he tap into it? That's the question.
I completely agree with everything Jason said.
I have very real concerns that he'll be in the Texas program beyond 2 years.
And that's to quote Matt Brown, that's fair. It really is. I mean, you know, so I understand why you would say that. But, you know, he's taking steps in the right direction. Let's just see if he can keep doing that. So.
I mean, in all the years I've been doing this, I know I can make a list of guys that I can remember being like thrown off, dismissed for them from their team or whatever for however extended a period of time. There's only one in my mind, and I don't put the guy on blast. I wonder if Sukumel even immediately thinks of the guy that I'm thinking of.
What's the position?
I don't even want to say that because I think it would give it away. But he ended up being an NFL player and is still playing.
No, then we're thinking of two different people.
Okay. Anyway, so maybe there's more than one. I've just forgotten. But typically, like, he just fits the profile. Like what Jason said, he has to grow up. He does. But that's a hard thing for a kid to fully grasp and realize. I don't even remember when I grew up, but it probably wasn't on a deadline that he's facing.
Has it happened? You're saying it's happened? Wait.
I get, man.
45, still going on 14. What are you talking about?
Four-year-old twins made me grow up. Honestly, like last night I was at 9 o'clock. I was ready to be in bed and I didn't go to bed till like one. But yeah, I was like, I want to be one of these old people that's in bed before 10. So like, you know, like I root for every kid. So I want this kid to be able to show up, because if the parts are concocted in a way that you guys have just outlined, like if he can just put the pieces together, this is a dude whose life can change forever in a few years. Like he's got Sunday type of physical attributes that in time could make him that type of a guy. He has some stuff you can't teach. But man, he also has that profile of a guy that, like I said, I'm 50-50 on whether or not I think he survives 2 years, and it's all predicated on his ability, again, to do something that's really hard, like grow up, right? Like we're joking about us being in our 40s and not growing up. And I know Dustin just rolled his eyes, but one day, and you too, Alex, it's coming for you. What do you got? 18 months?
It's what? So my kids? What? Till I get my son out of the house?
So you're 40.
Oh no, dude! I'm already a 39-year-old man, so I got less than a year.
Yeah. The countdown is on, so it's all of a certain 40s, except for baby Dustin. And he'll take it because that just means he's not in his 40s. I just, you know, I root for him, but like, it's a tough one. It's a tough one, and you know, I want to be realistic with people without calling the kid out. I don't even know how much I would talk about this other than the fact that so much of this is already public that it's ignoring it to not address it. And I don't want to tell the kid to grow up. I would just tell the kid, get ready, man. This thing is hard. It's very hard. And you may not play right away. And how you handle the hardness, both in the classroom and on the field, along with it's a lot of kids really struggle with not playing and having to deal with the difficulty of those other two things. Like, that's a kid when I grow up, dude, classes at the University of Texas, you got to go. Like, you have, they're just, it's hard. It is. I went to Texas. We all did. It's hard. I don't remember in all the years I was at Texas, I never had most of the semesters I had.
That just breezed by. It just doesn't happen.
With even one class, like even the history of rock and roll was harder than I thought it was. I was like, oh, I love music. And all these guys are in the class and they're talking about how they got A's. I didn't get an A in the history of rock and roll. Like everything was just more work than I was prepared for when I was put into that situation. And I personally, I was on academic probation after two semesters. Like I had to grow. I was one of these guys that had to grow up and like, okay, if you're going to be at a school like Texas, like there's a level of expectations that you have to adhere to. And I didn't have all my time in a Texas football program, like pulling me down, making it harder. So, I just scared all the kids in the country from being Division I athletes. But man, that's the deal. And some guys can do it and stick with it and they grow up and they fulfill their potential and other guys don't. And I worry about Javon. Questions. Let's do this because I put this on the board and it'll be a way for me to really get everybody involved in a short amount of time. Everybody's got like 30 seconds to answer the question and we'll just try to get in as many questions as we can and then we'll go into parting shots. Dustin, is the 2019 season for football Big 12 championship or bust?
Yes. Yeah, because that's the next step for the program to take. And that's Tom Herman admitted as much yesterday. I mean, that's the measure for success next season.
Jason, who were the top recruits leaning towards Texas it says leaning UT that we lost, in which you feel were by questionable means and to whom? Wow.
Well, that's a mouthful.
That dude got more into like 15 words than any question maybe ever asked on the site.
Like questionable. If you're throwing that caveat, I'll say Trey Sanders was the first one that comes to mind. leaning Texas. I mean, he was a silent commit to Alabama for a long time. Another thing I'll have in my notes tonight in the war room. But he did, when he visited Texas unofficially and then again officially for the USC game, I mean, he told some Texas players, and he had told people before that, other recruits, other Texas commits, hey, I'm coming to Texas. So, you know, I came out of that visit saying, hey, he's 50-50, and I might be short-selling Texas a little bit there or underselling Texas a little bit there. But he ends up, of course, going to Alabama. If you're saying, hey, questionable means, you know, just like one source said to me, sometimes it's not always a fair fight in recruiting.
I thought you could have just said it's the SEC and like all the
– you know, I've said that repeatedly on our board. I say, hey, Texas just – sometimes these SEC recruiting battles, Texas is going to have a hard time winning. And I don't think enough people have kind of picked up what I'm trying to say there. But that was just one that Texas – in the end, really wasn't going to win.
I thought that took balls to answer completely. Like, you fulfilled the obligation of that question when I might have been like,
"Oh, but I'll regret it." Yeah,
yeah, no comment. So I thought you answered it completely fair. Alex, who will have a more successful career, Tom Herman or Lincoln Riley?
Oh, man. Are you serious?
I just put you in the hot box. Hey, Jason just took a much harder question than that.
I don't know if it is. I think at Oklahoma, I think Tom Herman will have the more successful career at Texas because I think Lincoln Riley will eventually get hired out of Oklahoma, and I think that Herman will have the longer tenure.
I would agree with that.
Riley's eventually going to be the head coach of the Cowboys or one of these teams like that.
Dustin, of past players who didn't make it in, or did but fell off, who's the guy that stands out the most? How good did you think they would have been had they done the thing that we were just talking about with Javon Shepherd? Like, you put all the pieces in exactly the way they needed to, and they could have been what?
What was his name? Kendall Sanders? I mean, that guy.
I loved him.
He was elite at both receiver and cornerback. I mean, that guy could have been a – no doubt first round pick and had a long NFL career. I think, I mean, he was so good when I saw him in San Antonio, you know, and I forget specifically what exactly happened with him. Wasn't it like a domestic abuse type thing or something?
It was a pretty hairy little scheme.
Yeah.
It was Montrell Meander.
Yeah. It was something.
Charges were ultimately dropped, but
yeah,
that's one of those things you can't ever just totally.
Right. I mean, if that guy's, you know, let's say he steps on campus and goes on the path that Caden Stearns does with that kind of approach. I mean, he could have been a, you know, multi-year all conference guy and a future NFL first round pick.
I'll tell you this, the behind the scenes, the coaches totally agreed with you, Dustin. They thought he was a NFL type player. Yeah.
You know, it's funny, speaking of that, not to go too off topic here, but remember all the people that used to rave to us about Adrian Phillips?
And it's funny because he turned out to be pretty good.
Cool to see that he's turned out to be what a lot of people thought he would be in the NFL. And, you know, that guy, they used to say over and over, oh, this guy is going to be the next Earl Thomas and this and that. And we never quite saw it at Texas because he was injured so often. But it's cool to see him in the NFL having a lot of success and fulfilling that potential.
Hey, Ketchum, I'd like to ask – I think that question is interesting. I'd like to ask you, do you think that Sergio Kendall could have fallen into that mold? I mean, he did go on to play in the pros and stuff, but
he didn't.
He got drafted by the Ravens.
Yeah, but he never played.
Yeah, so, do you think that if he would have been on the straight and narrow for his whole time during college, things would have been different?
He might be the number one answer to that question, in my opinion.
You know, it's funny because you can ask, like Alex said, he got drafted. He was a second-round pick. He had no pro career over stupidity, honestly. An accident, I guess. But, you know, he danced with the devil in the moonlight a couple times.
Yeah, a lifestyle that sort of led to certain accidents.
Right? I'll give you the two names that Texas football players tell me. Like, if you ask anybody for the national championship team, their answers, because that's the heyday, the two names that I get 9 times out of 10, number one is Mike Williams. Everybody thinks that, like, that guy was already almost a college star and then just left and never played football again and had some issues. He went back to East Texas to address, and right as he was about to be the starting defensive end and a guy that was a sack. I mean, that guy had, his highlight tape as a high school recruit. I mean, my God, I still have it. Anybody want, it's one of those things, like, I need to take those old recruits and review tapes and, like, see if I can convert a VHS tape to, I don't know how you do that now, but
there's,
like,
companies you can just set it off.
Yeah, easy these days.
Oh my God, people would see the Mike Williams video and they would freak out because, like, he was ahead of his time in terms of, you know, Brew McCoy's a five-star guy and you look at him and he's five, but, like, you look at Mike Williams and go, man, that guy's just so wildly athletic. It was just different. The other guy's Eric Hardeman. There are, you get to ask a guy like Marcus Myers, like, he'll tell you Eric Hardeman is as talented, like, at his position to be a future pro as, you know, he had like Cedric Griffin was a beautiful athletic specimen. Like, Cedric Griffin for me is like the prototype. 6'1", long, incredibly, like, to me, Cedric Griffin wasn't the best player Texas ever had, but he's the best NFL specimen, I think, Texas has ever created a, as a defensive back. And that's what Eric Hardeman was at running back. Like, he was, the players will tell you, like, I don't know what Selvin Young's career would have been if Eric Hardeman wasn't a knucklehead. And boy, was like, do you remember talking to his mom, Jason? Like, well, that's a long time ago.
Yeah, but, mom was awesome.
She was, but, like, you know, like, there was, he had a complicated, he was the Javon Shepherd of his year. For those that don't remember, he, and we've really gone off topic, but it's an interesting conversation, I think. He got into a fight in the locker room. I can't remember with what player back in 2003 after the Arkansas game. Like, it was a legit fist fight after that 38-28 loss. And what was really notable about that is Adrian Peterson was in the locker room. And it was about a month before the Texas OU game, which Peterson took in person himself. But the Texas Peterson thing really went sideways when the Eric Hardeman fight happened. It just, you know, he's right there. Adrian Peterson had a front row seat to two dudes fight, like a legit fist fight between Division I athletes. And it was a bad scene. And, like, I still remember interviewing Adrian Peterson about that situation to this day. It was not the thing that caused him not to go to Texas, but it was really one of the first things that made him think, I'm not going to Texas. And by the end of the Texas OU game, that thing was done and dusted, and Texas never really had a chance again. But that's Eric Hardeman's biggest contribution to Texas football. For all the talent that he had, he played a role in starting the process of costing Texas Adrian Peterson. That's my way back story of the day. Hey, real quick, Alex, I'm going to throw this one your way, and then I'm going
to run. I'd say that person got their money's worth as far as the answer to that question.
Hey, Alex, the saga of Kirk Johnson. Take like 60 seconds to this because I got to go get a battery charger for my computer before it dies in the middle of this podcast before we wrap it up. So give me a minute on Kirk Johnson, considering it was a question that was asked yesterday.
Well, Kirk Johnson, whenever he came to Texas, and I mean, I have a hard time even remembering back. Was that 20? Was it 2015 class? I think, right? Was that 2015?
That's a catch-up question. Yeah. Close enough, right?
Whenever he came to Texas, people kind of looked at him as a guy, sort of like maybe a different situation because they came in separate years, but sort of similar to like Armani and Deontay Foreman, where one player was just taken because the other, you know, brother. And also, I mean, the fact that the Johnson brothers clearly are legacies here at Texas. Every time I saw Kirk Johnson while he was healthy, I was always super, super impressed with him. Anytime I'd seen him at camps, anytime I had seen him just at practices when he had been healthy, the time in the 2015 season where – or the 20 – I believe the 2016 – was the 2016 was whenever Chris Warren ran wild on Texas Tech, right? Chris Warren, the monster game versus Tech was – yeah, because the next year Deontay did it versus Tech in 2017.
That was his freshman.
Did virtually the same thing. So – If Kirk Kirk Johnson, if you'll remember, came in that game and had two very explosive runs before tearing his ACL on the third one. Looking every – like I said in practice, this guy looks like a jackrabbit. He has change of direction. That's, I mean, unlike what I ever see going to these all-star games, like just a bounce to his to his gait and the way that he ran so powerfully with that lower body, just an unbelievable specimen. And if you follow him on YouTube or any of the stuff, you see the work he does in the weight room and the stuff that he does in his vlogs, even now during his rehab and stuff. He is a jacked up, just unbelievable specimen of a young man. And every time in fall camp, it would seem like he would come in, he would practice without pads, and he would look like the best running back that Texas had on his roster. And then once camp started, it was always like, oh, well, there's knee inflammation, or, oh, Kirk Johnson, went down and broke his ankle, or all the rest of it. It's been a myriad of injury after injury after injury. I thought it was interesting kind of hearing some word from behind the scenes over the course of the last couple of days. And maybe that's why Ketchum asked, is it seems like there's been a little bit of buzz about maybe Kirk Johnson finally this year is going to be able to possibly contribute. And if that is the case, I would like to get a direct answer from somebody at the University of Texas about whether or not the injuries have just rendered Kirk Johnson not to quite be the athlete that he was on that day where the Chris Warren monster occurred. And if that Chris Warren monster would not have occurred, we would still be talking about that day to this very day as the Kirk Johnson monster, the Kirk Johnson breakout. I have no doubt in my mind. And I just wonder if between then and now and over the course of, I believe, one ankle reconstruction and two knee, at least one knee reconstruction and another knee sort of meniscus, if those injuries have maybe sapped some of that. And that's a real thing that happened to kids at this age. We've seen it happen here at Texas at the running back position very clearly with Jonathan Gray. Multiple lower leg injuries can take you from being a guy that was an unbelievable five-star recruit to a guy by the end of their career is a plodding liability. And I don't think that Kirk Johnson is quite that, what Jonathan Gray was by the end of his career at Texas. I mean, I've at least seen Kirk Johnson live and in person over the course of this last year at practices looking fine. And so I've often asked myself, all right, is it that the coaches just don't trust him because he can't stay healthy? Is it that the coaches don't really trust him because he hasn't been around for a good year or so to see how the system works? Why was it he didn't play at all this year? Didn't log any snaps on offense. But we've just gotten word over the course of the last couple of days that maybe something could be taken up for him to be a little bit more involved this year. And if that's the case, I'm excited about it. And it also probably lends credence to the idea that maybe his athleticism isn't sapped in the same way that we saw out of a Jonathan Gray who endured so many injuries during his time here at Texas.
Well, I hope it works out, but I'm
– Hey, real quick, guys. Because Alex took 2% off my battery with the answer.
I thought you were getting a charger.
I can't find it. So I've got 3% left. I just want you to know, like, Alex, you may have to close the show for me and, like, thank everybody and wave us goodbye because I don't know that I'm going to survive the rest of the podcast.
that sounds like an existential cry for help.
Well, I'll believe it with Kirk Johnson when I see it. I hope it works out real quick. I can say now Tommy Robinson, who recruited him, I remember Tommy told me, I think it was maybe going into Kirk's sophomore year after he was injured. He said, hey, he goes, you want to look real smart, start pumping up Kirk Johnson. I mean, he thought, this was after he'd had him on campus for a year, he thought that guy was a future superstar. So let's hope for Kirk Johnson's sake he can stay healthy and then kind of live up to what everybody thought he'd be.
There's some good questions that, because of my battery, we're not going to get to. Do you guys want to jump into parting shots? I know we're all stressed for time, and Dustin may either be asleep or deathly ill on the other end. Dustin, you still with us?
I am still with us.
Barely.
I am not dead, but I have felt better.
Give us a parting shot. It can be as long or short as you want it to. And why don't you get the hell on out?
This Texas basketball team's confusing. I mean, if they play like they did last night, they're going to get into the NCAA tournament, maybe with relative ease, considering when you look around at some of the potential at-large teams in college basketball. College basketball is just bad this year. There's not many good basketball teams this year. So another day in the life of covering a very confusing basketball team. They play one of their most complete games of the season last night and really, really dominated a red-hot Baylor team. So we'll see if they can finally string together a couple of wins, because they're going to be favored in at least their next three games, beginning with a road game at West Virginia this weekend. So they could actually show some signs of consistency and progress if they go on the road and win this weekend.
Go take some NyQuil and get on out of here.
Yeah, thank you.
Alex.
Speaking of Dustin being sick, man, I have this fitness club here in my neighborhood. I really love it. It's called Hill Country Indoor. And one of the reasons – actually, I'd say that the main reason that I'm a member there is because they have daycare where I can take my kid, like, while you work out, and you can put him – I say work out in quotes, because all I do is I take my kid up there to the daycare, and you can leave him in there for an hour and a half, I guess as long as your workout. And it's free with your membership. And so there's a nice cafe downstairs, and I do a ton of work up there so I can get my sun sort of out of my hair and ride in the morning. And the one thing I keep worrying about is, like, you know, how they're so little, they put stuff in their mouths and all this stuff. And I worry a ton about all this stuff going around with the flu. And I've always, like, I kind of worry about taking him in there because I don't want him to get sick. And so on my side, like, if he ever even has, you know, he has kind of allergies and stuff sometimes. If that kid ever even has so much as a damn runny nose, I don't take him in there, because, to be honest, I would feel like crap handing him over to the nursery lady, her seeing that runny nose, her worried about whether or not these other kids are going to catch something, whether or not he's going to be sneezing all over all these toys the other kids are going to be putting in their mouths, all this stuff. I just have the decency and the sense and the understanding to know if my kid is sick or there's anything that could precipitate a sickness, like a runny nose, like a cough, like the fact that he's maybe sniffling or keeping rubbing his nose, I simply won't go that day. I'll stay home and I'll figure out a way to get stuff done. Right. Yesterday I get a text message saying that there's a sick kid in the kid care. And, you know, we're going to be shutting down at 11:30 to clean up. We'll open back up at like 12:30 or whatever. So I of course, being the hypochondriac I am, I run upstairs. I'm like, what the hell happened? They're like, this girl puked over in the corner. You don't have to worry because, you know, Merritt was over here, like, partitioned off, kind of quarantined off in the area for the little baby kids. And this was like a big girl kid in the big girl kid area. But still, I looked at them and I said, how was the kid sick whenever the kid came in, you know? And they're like, what do you mean? I'm like, well, whenever you took the kid in, did it have like a runny nose or was it coughing? They're like, kind of like, yeah, maybe a little bit runny nose. I'm like, why do you even take the kid in? Why shouldn't there be a rule? And what is the reparations for the parents?
Parents are just idiots, yeah.
I mean, like, what is the, like, you bring a sick kid in here to this goddamn petri dish and just you want to affect everybody? It's like you're bringing in some kind of like a biological weapon that's going to ruin the lives of these families, of these kids, for the next like 3 or 4 days because you're so selfish. I would just say, if you're a parent and your kid is sick, and even if they're not sick this time of year, if they have a runny nose, if they're sniffly, if they're coughing, if they're sneezing, don't take them into daycares. Because other parents aren't, and you're the one being the monster.
Good old-fashioned Alex rant. Love it, dude. I think Ketch is officially dropped from the call. I mean, I'm assuming his computer died, so I'll just jump in with my parting shot, and then we'll call it a day on this one. It's been longer than I think we anticipated it would be. I don't have much from recruiting, man. It's just, you know, obviously signing day was yesterday, and I'm just kind of enjoying a day or two of slow time. So just two kind of family stories. Yesterday was a great day for me, and then today turned into just got a little bit of sour news. Nothing bad, but I'll get to. So yesterday, my daughter, I'm going to brag on my daughter a little bit, my oldest daughter, tried out for the track team, the middle school track team. She's in seventh grade. And she's kind of always been the athletic one of all four of my kids. Just, she plays lacrosse. She's just super fast and picks things up very quickly, just naturally athletic. Well, they had so many girls try out that they were timing them in the 200 and the 800, and they were timing them, and I think they'll do the 100 today and the 400 or something. But they said, hey, we need one girl to basically run with the boys because we have too many girls. So my daughter Cora, they said, Cora, run with the boys. She's in seventh grade. She had to run against the seventh and eighth grade boys. So not just boys, but boys that are a year older than her. She beat every boy in the 200-meter dash, and she took first place in the 800, too. So I was like, man, maybe I've got something with this this girl, she's got long legs. I keep telling her, like, you need to do hurdles, man. You got long legs and you're fast, and there's a technical element of hurdles to go along with the speed. But
pretty scholarship money, right?
Hey, brother, that's what I'm hoping. And I'm hoping, like I said, she's really into lacrosse too. So I'm like, I'm hoping she gets one of those two pans out, because my other kids, nah, probably not. So I got one that I'm hoping for. But so that was a good day, man. I was excited, and then I woke up today, and I mentioned this to the guys before we started recording. So this weekend is the first weekend I would say have off, but I haven't had any recruiting stuff with signing day just having passed. Nothing really going on for me this weekend for the first time in months, it feels like. And then projecting forward, literally starting next weekend all the way through into April because of camps, because of junior days, because of track meets that I'll be covering. I don't have a weekend off for the next 2.5 months. So this weekend I get off, and I'm so looking forward to just being a bum and barbecuing and watching movies and doing whatever the hell I want. I just found out it looks like my mother-in-law is coming into town to do some house hunting, and I've got to take her around and do a bunch of house hunting. So, as good as yesterday was.
At least, man, when the mother-in-law comes to town, isn't that at least like you don't got to take care of, like, at least that's somebody taking the kids off to go to lunch and do stuff that. No.
I love her. I do love my mother-in-law. She's awesome. But no, she's not that type that is that hands-on with all four kids. It's almost overwhelming to her, which I get. But that'll be my off weekend. We'll be driving her around Georgetown. We've got a realtor driving her around Georgetown and Liberty Hill house hunting. So as good as yesterday was, today, not so good. But that's my parting shot. Not a lot of recruiting stuff to talk about, honestly. So just whatever, a little personal notes there. But with that, Alex, I'm going to sign us off. And always, a huge shout out and a thank you to Ticket City for sponsoring this podcast. As Kat said in the early portion of the podcast, go for them for any of your ticket needs. They can hook you up with literally anything and everything, be it sporting events, concerts, anything you can think of, Ticket City can take care of you. So on behalf of Ketch, on behalf of Anwar, who is enjoying some time with his mom right now, Dustin, who is hanging around, although he's fighting through some kind of crud, Ketch, whose computer battery died, myself, Alex, everybody else, hey, thanks for listening. Y'all have a good week. We'll talk to you next week.